Lucette, E.H., 8th of January, 1966.
Can you recollect in what period you were associated with the cooperative credit movement?
Yes. When you say period, what do you mean? Period of my life, period of history, or period of...
Exact dates, if possible.
Yes. Well, I should think my first slight contact with cooperation would be about 1926, after I was married. Mm-hmm. And I went into her apartment then. And I worked when one of you, maybe not Campbell, was on leave, or else came into an apartment permanently when Maven and later Campbell, of course, retired.
That was in 1931 or so?
Well, I should say it would be 1931 also, if you're about right.
And what would you say were the main aims of this cooperative credit movement?
Well, you know, that's a very comprehensive question. Mm-hmm. I think its real main aim, in the eyes of Campbell, Maven and myself, mm-hmm. was really to teach self-reliance. Now, that is one of the queen aims of cooperation, and it's one which Campbell, who after all trained and taught us, made his very particular favorite
objective.
So much did he make it his favorite objection that I would say, on the whole, he didn't exploit in any way the good relations he could have had with a minister who thought very well of cooperation and indeed favored it greatly.
Mm-hmm.
Saranaga.
Yes, I see.
And I think here I am now generalizing what took place over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell's emphasis was always on the you must do it yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Always saying you must do it, you mustn't look to government, you must do it yourself. Saranaga was, I think, always willing to see that more financial or other help was available than he actually thought was suitable for that particular movement.
Mm-hmm. So in a sense, Saranaika wanted more government aid pumped in and more...
I would say that. I have great admiration for Saranaika,
mm-hmm.
but he was willing to go more than the whole hog to
mm-hmm.
help. But I don't think he ever realized that the movement, as we conceived it, was one in which you didn't look to somebody else to solve your problems,
mm-hmm.
but you said we're going to solve this ourselves. And in point of fact, Campbell succeeded very greatly, and we all succeeded very greatly, in one or two places.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
like?
Jaffna particularly.
Mm-hmm.
There was a boat service, a hospital. Those are things. And you notice I'm not speaking about cooperative credit, which was in fact their main and their instructional platform was cooperative credit,
mm-hmm.
to teach them to create, no, I don't mean in a banking sense,
mm-hmm.
but to build up money for themselves and to be honest and punctual in meeting their obligations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this sounds very grandmotherly stuff, but it really was absolutely vital. The whole idea was really to turn people to look to themselves to solve their own difficulties.
Mm-hmm. I see. That was the main aim. Would you say that as a subsidiary aim, I mean, or rather an associated aim, there was this idea of cooperative credit in the village areas to counteract the effects, well, not even in the village areas, in general, to counteract the effects of indebtedness?
Well, certainly,
mm-hmm.
certainly the idea was owes debt redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement started and began, as began everywhere that I know, on a business of increasing your credit worthiness and the money which you handle. It was, to begin with, a form of banking
mm-hmm.
on a village scale
mm-hmm.
aimed at village needs.
But while this was the immediate aim, the larger and ultimate aim was to teach self-reliance.
The associated aim, unquestionably, cooperation. Watchdale pioneers
mm.
help themselves in very great difficulties. And that idea of building up yourself for your own effort was really basic to the whole thing.
Mm.
And I think that's absolutely true. Curiously enough, it had very great success as well as a very great failure in associated members. Now, we started stores.
Mm-hmm.
And a great many of these stores were really very successful, particularly in certain areas where they were pushed rather, worked rather hard.
Mm.
And it was really a very great success, and that was not a credit movement, but it was a movement in which people did help themselves to solve meeting of some particular need they felt.
Mm.
And that was a success, because there were quite a number of these estate workers of States were an ideal place for them to start in. There were great successes for them. I think more particularly in the Pastora area.
What estates? The European-owned ones or both Sudanese and European-owned?
No, so far as I remember, the European-owned ones, but that was not an objective at all.
I know. But the point was, the point I'm getting at is that with European direction, it's more likely to be...
There was no European direction.
Oh, I see.
There was only European toleration. I mean, there was just this toleration. And in one of the cases I remember, cooperative movement came into conflict with the village traders, the
mm-hmm.
people who were affected by their emergence. Wasn't the estate profited by it? People who didn't like it were the village traders.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of squeak quite hard at one stage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it must have been a fairly solid movement, because I believe that when the war broke out, I believe that the whole food distribution scheme, or whatever it was, I don't know what it was, I'm told it was more based on cooperative stores which were hastily constructed to carry the weight of the government scheme. Now, I may be quite wrong over that, but that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, as having this aim of self-reliance, what were your methods and principles in effecting it?
Well, if you take a cooperative movement, a very simple method was to be punctual in paying your debts. And if you couldn't pay it all, to pay something. I mean, it was so simply a question of teaching people to be trustworthy and reliable to a degree they could achieve, and not if they were going to default in part, to default in toto.
Mm-hmm.
It was entirely teaching people to sustain whatever they could sustain or what they ought to sustain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really a method. If you can't pay it all, pay what you can pay. Essentially based on reliability and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to some extent, you teach honesty by teaching people to be punctual and to fulfill their obligations in debt repayment.
Yes, but when you got down to brass tacks and the details, how do you go about teaching them this?
Well, I mean, merely by talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I suppose that's what those guys is, but they formed societies and they paid a certain amount of money in, and they used the money they had paid in loans to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if they didn't pay it back, they were ruining their own society. It was a fairly simple lesson. I mean, a lesson which experience very soon taught them. It taught some by success, it taught others by failure. But there were very good societies, very honourable societies, I remember how frightfully good some societies were, particularly in tobacco growing areas, because they need growers and they can repay them when the crop comes. Mm-hmm. So they were almost ideal societies for illustrating the theory. Mm-hmm.
Had it any influence on paddy growing?
Well, there were societies. It certainly worked in areas where paddy was grown, but you know that is really a much more chancy crop. And so the work tended to be considerably more difficult because often paddy itself, you sow it, mm-hmm. and it's a half failure.
Yes, I see.
And then to teach people, well, if it's a half failure, you can pay back half. Mm-hmm. You had to work a good deal harder, and you needed to exercise a good deal more influence and to be believed. But tobacco was an easy crop because you get your crop, you sell it, and get ampere covers the loan. Mm-hmm. But in paddy, certainly it's worked in single-use societies, it worked there all right. But I don't think it worked quick enough. I think a whole demand, of people was a speed, and it's for them to talk about that. And I think I suggest that the biggest objection, the biggest difficulty one encountered, was the fact that this scheme of self-help is itself a slow solution. It doesn't flash like that and produce a marvelous answer.
Yes, I see. How did you go about starting these societies? I mean, each one, I presume you went around and talked, really.
You went around and talked, and at least somebody, I think you would say a solution would be this, that somebody catches the idea and continues to talk and to canvas when you're not there, because it's a self-help movement. I mean, in the growing, the growth has got to spring from a local root. It's mm-hmm. not imposed. You don't say, I'm going to plant a cooperative society. You really do say, I'm going to assist a cooperative society to grow up here. Mm-hmm. And
I see. And so that, would it be correct to say that you made it a point never to initiate a society in a particular area? I mean, you see something, some tobacco growing area, and you think, there should be a society there, and you go there and organize one for them. You didn't do that sort of thing.
Well, I don't know. I thought it was done. But the way in which it was done was not that of saying, okay, you're going to have a society here. Mm-hmm. It was getting somebody interested in the idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a question of talking, but you certainly would try to start a society where there's a need for it, because you would hope would open people's ears to what you were trying to say. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one thing to open their ears, quite another thing to open their minds. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have in mind that when I was registrar, there was a very great desire among some of the furniture making groups to get a cooperative society. And that was a good enough idea. Mm-hmm. But their idea was that cooperative societies would spring up and that would solve their immediate problems. Mm-hmm. They didn't so rapidly get the idea that you've got really to address yourself to the type of behavior you need to import to make this quite strenuous class of society work.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that quite often it was necessary to dampen the anticipations of these people who were starting a cooperative society?
Dampen impatience?
Dampen their high anticipations, in the sense that many of them might have expected cooperative credit to be a panacea for all their ills, when it was not so.
Well, I should say, yes, but I think we were remarkably well aware of how easily people hope too high.
Yes.
And so the whole training would really be to make them see things as they were. Mm-hmm. It's worthwhile remembering that in the Eastern Province, which had been worked up at the time when the cooperative movements in the hands of the agricultural department wound up the whole blessed thing. If it had been started not by us, it had gone absolutely, wrong and rotten, we wound up the whole blessed thing.
Wrong and rotten in what sense? Corruption?
Oh, no, 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 just a failure. Mm-hmm. Default, gross default.
Yes, I see. Mm-hmm. That's in part because the agriculture department was running that.
Well, I mean, I was saying that they were not instructed or trained in mm-hmm. the way which we tried to train them later on, where we were. We were very slow because we did feel it was a bit of good starting a society in 1 year, liquidating in the next.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we never registered until we felt they really understood what the basis of a healthy existence could be, and really were resolved at least to attempt to achieve it.
Yes, that's very interesting, because I think someone else mentioned the fact that Campbell wanted to go slowly in a very gradual, traditionalist manner, whereas Serenaika, when he came, wanted to go a bit faster. Would that be correct?
I would say it would be correct, but I don't awfully like just attributing it. It's perfectly true that Campbell wanted to go slowly, not because he thought slowness was any good, but because he realized what he was preaching mm-hmm. just had to be grasped, appreciated and understood. Mm-hmm. And since human nature doesn't flick black and white,
just like that,
acceleration, he wanted to go slowly, he wanted to do his work properly. Mm-hmm. Now, Serenaika, who really was a great friend of the cooperative movement, he was tremendously anxious, I think, to get a move on. And I'd kind of leave it, because I think he was a jolly good man, but I do think that he really expected to see results far quicker than the very nature of the cooperative department allowed. After all, what we were doing, you can call it a government activity, but in point of fact, it's a complete personality activity. Mm-hmm. It was really involved entirely in the reconstruction of personalities. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think it's fair to say, one of the reasons Tamils were, on the whole, more successful mm-hmm. was from their very nature. You know, later on, I tried very hard to form Singhalese labor societies.
Labor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The whole idea was you should have a group of people, say 200 if you like, as many people as the village could do, and they should undertake a contract for work 25 people at a time. Mm-hmm. So you could go for 90% default. Well, they were not a success. And they were not a success because, in point of fact, the nature of the people didn't allow them, I think, very readily to organize themselves so that they could turn out what they were contracted to turn out. Mm-hmm. But quite a number of planters were quite willing. But it's one thing to be willing in theory, it's quite another thing to be willing to turn out in the rain, for example, with tea plucking.
Yes, I see.
I mean, you see, a great many things, when you get down to it, in fact, your words get close to reality. And it's one thing to say, yes, I'm willing to turn out. It's quite another thing to turn out at 6 o'clock in the morning, a wet morning, mm-hmm. and 4,000 feet.
Mm. For this sort of thing, would you say that the Singhalese were generally too ill-disciplined?
Well, yes, they certainly are. I mean, I think it's an outstanding example. They simply would not accept the regularity of saying, I will turn out every Monday, every Tuesday, whatever day it is. Mm. Or, if I can't turn out myself, I'll get somebody else to turn out. I mean, simply submitting to an ordination, submitting to a rule, mm-hmm. is what they couldn't do. If I feel like it, I'll do it. With much more attitude.
Yes, I see. Actually, I was going to ask you that question, whether the Tamils were better than the Singhalese.
Yeah, but don't put me as saying so, because it's not my way to think like that at all. I mean, I think they're two quite different characters. Mm-hmm. And I think, in point of fact, cooperation could have helped either of them. But Tamil is a very different type, and he's half trained. I mean, after carrying up and cleaning up the land in either northern province has accustomed him to steady, unremitting work, and he produces it with a very high degree of skill. They had great successes in Jaffna. You know, they started a cooperative hospital, a cooperative boat society at Tauragi Islands. Well, they were very high and very successful forms of organization of cooperation.
What was the general response in Ceylon to this appeal to start societies?
Well, I don't know whether such an appeal was ever made, because I would say that the whole idea was cooperation has got to meet a need. So first of all, you don't say here you work cooperatively, you will find it's very good for you. You have to find out what people's need is.
All right, then. Where you found a need and where you were trying to raise up a cooperative movement of sorts, what was the response like? In general, I mean, did you find, for instance, that in several places where you thought it was good to have a society and try to rouse up this local root, this idea did not take root?
I don't think it's a case of the idea not taking root. It's a question of whether it took sufficient root to sustain the strain of endurance.
Yes, I see.
I think if it had only been a matter of rousing enthusiasm, it would have been remarkably simple.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, you had to whip enthusiasm into being persistence.
Mm-hmm. And in that sense, did you find that the response was not very good, a sort of persistence, an enduring response?
I would say on the whole the response was good,
mm-hmm.
but is disappointing in fact that from time to time a good early response was not followed up by persistent effort. I mean, the amount of work which my inspectors did was colossal,
mm-hmm.
and if it hadn't been colossal, a great deal would have perished much earlier. Well, that's a disappointing aspect, was it needed such a lot of digging and working and repetition to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be inclined to attack the lack of response, only the lack of persistence.
Mm-hmm. What about the enthusiasm among these inspectors and the lower ranks of the government cooperative service?
I think we had a very fine staff. Mm-hmm. I think we had a very fine staff indeed.
And it was primarily, mainly a local staff.
Entirely.
Mm-hmm. I suppose this was really essential because the language question in itself.
Well, I suppose so, mm-hmm. but the only Europeans were Campbell, maybe, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the staff, I think, was extremely good. Very loyal, very earnest people. They worked, I think, with great enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
I really want not discuss that further because you realize mm-hmm. that there are a great many inducements to work when it is your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I don't want to talk about that because I don't belittle people. I think we had some very, very fine, some very devoted inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
Whom I have the greatest opinion, really I have the highest opinion. And certainly we have some assistant registrars,
mm-hmm.
very excellent metal.
If I may ask, what were Campbell's particular qualities?
Well, he was an outstandingly fine man. He was a man of very great drive.
Mm-hmm.
Very great force. He could lose his temper. He could also keep it. He's
mm-hmm.
also a man of very great kindness.
Mm-hmm.
He's a person who was very prone to help and assist.
Well, that's what I gathered. He was definitely an initiator, wasn't he? I mean, in this movement itself, it was a sort of pioneering movement.
Initiator?
Yes.
Yes, I think he was.
And also I gathered that earlier, he had refused secretariat posts, and he was, in a sense, a very much provincial man, and I presume he was very much interested in the village, and that's what led him to start this movement.
I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. And but what made him leave? In the night, he left rather prematurely.
I'm just trying to remember. He went on working in cooperation.
He went to the UN later, I think, or the League of Nations.
Well, he went to China. He went to China, and after that, I know he went over to Geneva. But I think his first thing was to accept a job in China, and he certainly went around most of the countries inside the Commonwealth and advised about cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was really, I think that was personal enjoyment, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
He was very keen on the movement, and I think he thought he could offer a great deal of advice to many people.
Mm-hmm.
I think if, by the way, he's right to say, but Campbell's a great friend of mine. A man came to Ceylon in my day from India, from Punjab,
mm-hmm.
Calvert. Now, he was a first-class cooperator. He really understood the whole theory and principle of the undistributed reserve fund and its use, perhaps better than anybody had at all. Campbell always felt that if the reserve fund was just thrown into common use, it would be less attractive. I think he thought that. Anyhow, the difference between him and Calvert was that Calvert made the non-division of the reserve fund the very essence of cooperative reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it was safety too, because...
Safety?
Yes, mm-hmm. Because you see, if people chose to use their own money, they didn't risk anybody except themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't borrowing money to lend it. They were building up their own reserve fund, their own undistributed profits. And if those were good enough, presumably you made a society which was considerably stronger than one which distributed its profits and hoped to raise loans
mm-hmm.
from somewhere to lend money.
Yes. What was its success in reducing indebtedness where it was started?
Well, it depends what you're thinking of. What do you mean in terms of island-wide indebtedness, or what do you mean in terms of village indebtedness?
Village indebtedness.
Well, I should say it was just as good as the people were who practiced it.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody really practiced it, he'd find himself out of debt. Mm-hmm. If you found somebody who carried all slipshod ways into the movement.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it necessary for a movement to endure and to succeed, that it was necessary that what I would call a local big bug should have a hand in it, rather...
No, indeed not. Mm. I would say it was perhaps the most dangerous thing, because a man's quality wouldn't be as a big buggery, it would really be of service.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever found a person who joined to serve, you would find a gem. But just getting a big man in was absolutely fatal. It was one thing we didn't want. He comes in, he overcrowds the society, everybody looks to him.
Yes, I see.
And he gets the focus entirely wrong, away from self-help, into concentration on the big man who has succeeded and will help us.
Personal aggrandizement.
It's entirely a very antithesis of any sort of good and reliable and enduring cooperation.
Did you find big men trying to push their way in like this?
Well, I haven't any doubt of a certain number, because it's just as likely to exist in that class of society as anywhere else.
Mm.
But if women was encouraged or enjoyed or appreciated, no, it wasn't at all. And it wasn't necessary, it wasn't right. I mean, occasionally you have people coming in, and Roman entire philanthropic motives. You could at least we'd get to make central deposits, and that finds capital for society. Mm-hmm. I don't like generalizing about capital, because there were some very, I think, noble-minded people
mm-hmm.
who helped Vestergaard Bigoting. There were some plenty of people who were only too prepared to exploit in the bigotry which might be available.
Yes, I think you've been very fair here, and it's very good. What about the politicians themselves? And even in St. Anarcho's case, for instance, he had rather high hopes. Did you feel that politically, that politicians were inclined to have high hopes? Because they were politicians and because this was something they could talk about?
Well, you see, I personally think St. Anarcho is a very notable man. But to begin with, he's a perfect menace to us, because he felt that if we wanted to, we can make it work twice as fast. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't possible. You can't just tell human nature to pluck it and stir up. Mm-hmm. And he never could. He never could accept that fact. And he didn't accept it, you see. In the war, I believe it was his influence which really made the cooperative movement the hub of controlled distribution in mm-hmm. wartime. So that I've no doubt he or his son would have answers which wouldn't agree with mine.
Mm-hmm.
But from the point of view of national reconstruction, which is what I've really been talking about, he was quite wrong. The best thing he could possibly have done was to build up the cooperative movement and let it go on, and let it go on solidly and see what it can do. But it's only right to realize, Mr. Roberts, that the speed was too slow, not only for St. Anarcho, it's too slow for the world, too.
Mm-hmm.
Much too slow for the world. After all, cooperation started in England way back in 1860.
Yeah.
And it had plenty of time to be jolly slow, mm-hmm. and it was jolly slow. And today, it's simply swamped and lost. And you see, that old tempo was its own worst enemy. It was doing a good thing, but it was doing so slowly that people wouldn't wear it. And I don't know what to say about it today. I mean, I feel that not only Salon wouldn't wear it, I doubt whether anybody is wearing so slow developing a thing. It may be, I still don't know, I don't know any way by which you can change human nature, because after all, that was what Cooperative Department really set out to do. Really set out to train people to look at themselves, for themselves. And that was the monumental problem which everybody tried extremely hard to achieve. And incidentally, I must pay tribute here to Yatawarra Senior, because
Yatawarra.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man who always kept his cooperative ideals absolutely clear and true. He's a very fine man. I have a highest opinion of him.
What was he?
He was an assistant registrar in my day. He was a very fine man. I'm very fond of him indeed. If only there could have been more men of his quality. Scale, more men like him to be a marvelous king, because really he was absolutely outstanding in the sincerity and understanding of what he was teaching.
I was wondering whether Campbell left because of St. Anarcho.
Oh, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so, because Campbell was a fighter,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think he would have left because of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I know so little about that, but it would be strange to me to think that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I would just as easily think that Campbell left because the department moved out of Candy down to Colombo, which was one of St. Anarcho's moves, I know, and Campbell didn't enjoy being in Colombo,
mm-hmm.
because he was very much a countryman.
Yes. What about the rural marketing? Was that rural marketing scheme which was started later, was that associated with this or entirely separate?
No, there's a federal marketing department. But marketing is a very difficult form of cooperation, and while there were one or two marketing societies, I never believed myself they were at all well funded, nor at all well understood.
Weren't you a commissioner for development of agricultural marketing?
No, that was Mr. Bassett who did. And that I think that department started very largely because it wasn't started on cooperative lines. I think they hoped to bolster up is provision and distribution. And not only provision, distribution of things produced. So it was a marketing department that was, except here and there, dissociated from cooperation. Mm-hmm. The rare cooperative marketing societies.
Mm-hmm. Ran those, the marketing department or you?
Well, we ran those for cooperative. Those who were not cooperative were run by the marketing department.
I see. Within the cooperative movement as a whole, speaking from what I know of it very vaguely nowadays, what about question of embezzlement and corruption? Did that arise at all in your time?
Oh yes, something arose. But then, yes, something arose all right.
Well, it was bound to. I mean, I'm
bound to arise. It did. You see. Just opportunities existed for people just to put their fingers onto something.
Mm-hmm.
And they took them. But then there were many people who didn't take them. Well, many people who did.
And do you find it, rather dampening? I mean, did it dampen your enthusiasm, your personal enthusiasm?
Oh, well, I suppose so, yes. But, I don't think it ever dampened me seriously, because I think one tried to turn all those episodes where it existed into something on which you preached a sermon.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to say, well, don't do the same as they've just done down there.
Yes, I see.
If you do, you have the same consequences.
Mm-hmm. And as one of your methods, I suppose, you proceeded on the principle of trial by error.
I want to say to that, because I think what you tried to do was to explain a very simple system. It's a very simple system which fitted squarely into honesty. You illustrate the folly of roaming away from that by experiences which other people had from not following the doctrine, is what I really rather say about it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you were societies in Vatico, though, which had a colossal figure of default.
Mm-hmm.
Vatico, as you know, is a petty-raising society, or a petty-raising district. Opportunities of defalcation were numerous and were taken.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a tremendous amount of liquidation of those who had defaulted too grossly. But the only point of mentioning that is that we did try to use those unfortunate experiences to tell people, well, if you want to go to hell in your own way, you go like that, and you certainly will get there. But it won't be cooperation.
When you look at it, this has a lot of analogies to democracy too, doesn't it?
I expect it does, yes. I expect it does. I'm not very wedded to democracy.
Pardon?
I'm not very wedded to democracy.
Mm.
I agree with Aristotle. I think it's a worse form of government.
If I may turn to an entirely different sphere and take on general administration, if I may ask, what made you join the colonial service?
Colonial service?
Yes, government service. What made you join Ceylon Civil Service?
Oh, well, I think having taken an exam, I was offered a post to the Ceylon Civil Service. I took it.
It was just a question of a job?
No, I don't think so. I had always hoped when I was school before war, I thought it would be very pleasant to go to Sudan. Then, after the war, I found that the examination or opening was offered to me for the Indian Civil Service and the Colonial Civil Service and the Home Civil Service. Well, I didn't. I could have got to India, I didn't want to go there.
Why?
Why?
Political situation?
Yes, I just wasn't interested in India. And I therefore accepted the post in the Colonial Service. I didn't get the Home Civil Service.
What are your impressions of the CCS as a whole?
I think that's too big a question to answer. Right?
It caused a lot of generalization, I'm afraid. For instance, when you went out and you were a cadet, did you find that you were expected to pick up your job very much on your own?
Yes, I did. I did. I regard my first appointment as really fantastic, inappropriately managed. I was sent to Anuradhapura, and the amount of instruction I again received was negligible.
This point has been made by others too. For instance, when you were met at the Colombo Jetty by someone and taken to meet the colonial secretary, did he give you any idea of what was expected of you?
In second again, no.
None?
No.
And he just shunted off to Anuradhapura and expected to?
I expected, so far as I remember, to check books.
This is very much in the British empirical tradition of sending their men out to the bush to...
Well, it's a tradition which, thank God, they've altered a great deal, because in the years since I retired, they've sent them up to universities to get some sort of instruction in some sort of government. But I can only say that so far as we are concerned, there was no such instruction given either at home or in Ceylon.
Yes.
You were left entirely to whatever training GA to whom you were posted was inclined to give you.
And your GA was not inclined to give you much?
No. Seymour, I don't really think he was. I think his strongest ability was in the stock exchange. As there's no stock exchange, and I wasn't interested in the stock exchange anyhow, I don't think. Very useful.
Would you have liked to have this sort of university training, general theoretical training?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think it was necessary. For me, I was at Oxford myself. I didn't really feel that I needed. What I should have liked to have understood and received was some slight disquisition about Ceylon's place among the nations in history. I mean, I should like to have known a great deal more than I did know about the place of China and Ceylon on the fringe of China, and get all those civilizing forces which more or less joined or touched each other in the Dutch East Indies. I do think that should and could have made one's service very much more valuable.
One of my hobby horses has been the fact that they should have had a short period of instruction and discussion in Ceylon itself by someone with experience on some aspects of Ceylon history and administrative history, pretty recent history, and a discussion of problems, unusual problems, like chain of question, land tenure, and also in the light of policies in other countries like Indonesia and India. Would that sort of thing have helped?
I think what would have helped most would have been a way in which a young man coming to Ceylon could really have met and moved in Sinhalese or Tamil society easily. So that instead of just going to his own community, if he had really met two major communities and made himself, learned to make himself agreeable to them, I think that would remarkably soon have assisted him very greatly. Because, you know, I haven't any doubt that the more serious-minded people who joined the Royal Asiatic Society and such like could have found answers to some of the problems which I didn't find an easy